Okay, welcome back to Chavrusa with Hilu. My name's Abraham Hilu, and I will be your host for today and hopefully for a long time. I just want to tell everybody to have a gewalt, a wonderful day. Whenever you need some learning, I'm your guy, and let's just jump into it. So, we were talking about Shlomo HaMelech saying this quote of fear God and keep his mitzvos, for this is the whole of mankind. And we are going on to say that Shlomo HaMelech is one of the most validity, most credible people that we would listen to when saying such a heavy verse of go ahead and that the reason why this verse is so, you know, it has a lot of validity, but it also has a lot of weight on it in what the quote is telling you to do, which is, you know, have fear in a bigger power that you do not know about, and also do all the things that this unknown power tells you to do. And by the way, these are the reasons why this world was created, and possibly the quote might be saying that if you do anything else, you're probably not going to achieve the amount of success that you could have. Now, is that true? I would say yes. Why? Because King Shlomo HaMelech was literally the man that did everything. As it says in the Pasuk, Zeh HaPasuk Amar Shlomo HaMelech Vehu Haya Chacham Mikol Adam, because he was the wisest man in his time. Vehaya Melech Al HaElyonim Ve'Al HaTzionim. And we talked about in the previous episode of that he ruled over celestial and terrestrial beings. This man sounds very divine. Sounds like some sort of character that Stan Lee would write in the Marvel comics. Shlomo HaMelech was a very divine person. I would say the reverse of that is that Marvel comics probably took the superpowers that Shlomo HaMelech had as an inspiration. This man was practically like a Jesus, you know what I'm saying? That's a joke. I'm Jewish, but he had the key to the Matrix. He was able to understand all the glories and all the wisdom that you could ever learn in this world. And that wasn't because he did that by himself. Hashem actually gave him that supernatural power for him to really go ahead and discover the universe. Shlomo HaMelech was a very, just going back to this whole idea of that Shlomo HaMelech knew everything, and to come to you and say that, dude, forget about all the shtus, forget about all the crap that we see in this world that is a distracting, that are a lot of distracting factors to our success. Focus on the specifics, focus on the objective. And what Shlomo HaMelech is trying to explain is that the objective is to fear God and keep his mitzvos. Now, I want to go into some direct quotes about why is this so true. And we're going to go ahead and see why. So what is his proven thesis? Shlomo HaMelech, we're going to go into the mind of how he really developed this, right? So V'yachar shira'a chol ha'ma'asim v'nisa kol ha'devarim. This man had proven all things. He amassed all this knowledge that he already learned. V'odia la'olam kama chochmo. And he promulgated much wisdom to the world, right? And I have a lot of ADD, so it just goes crazy. And he promulgated all this wisdom. And he came to the conclusion and he sealed off his words before he died. And he said, fear God and keep his mitzvos. Yeah, fear Hashem. He sealed off his words by saying the end of all things is fear of Hashem. And then the literal conclusion was Isha Yiras Hashem Yiras Hashem Reshit Das, because fearing God is the beginning of knowledge. So us as human beings, our natural instinct is to be curious, is to look around the world and say, what are these things that I see every day and try to make conscious. All right, had to stop there, had to do something, but we were talking about that, you know, man is naturally curious and he goes along and tries to understand, you know, just the physical functions of how we operate day to day, right? That's why we go to school. That's why we interact with other people. That's why we like to, you know, explore outside of our comfort zones. We want to know the truth. We always want to thrive for that. And Shlomo HaMelech was doing the same thing. He also was trying to figure out, what is the truth in this world? What am I getting out of this? Just like someone that gambles, a person wants to bet a certain amount of his own values so he can get a bigger return for in whatever he invests in, or an investor, as you know, that would probably be a better analogy because gamblers are bad. But I mean, I'll cut that out. But just going on to that idea, I want to get straight into the sauce. Now, what is the sauce? Let's try to give some logical conversation into this. So if Shlomo HaMelech, a human being, is saying, fear Hashem, why would I need to fear Hashem, right? What is Hashem? Hashem is the God that the Jewish people believe that created this world. Now, if Hashem is someone that had the amount of power that was able to create the entire universe and is clearly some sort of omnipresent being, then why would he need us little tiny humans, probably the same size as ants compared to how he's looking up from the glass jar and saying, you know, why do I, like, what's up? Like, you get what I'm saying over here? Is that God doesn't need us to fear him, right? You know, fear in itself is a human emotion. It's something that we use to survive sometimes. We use to doubt ourselves sometimes. And we use to, you know, in essence, you know, to feel human. Now, does that human emotion God needs because, what, he doesn't have fear? Like, he doesn't have these sort of emotions that he doesn't understand, so he wants to be the end part of what we're feeling? I wouldn't necessarily say that. For a person that's omnipresent, I wouldn't really care about anything fearing me because I'm already perfect. I don't need anything to fill me in, right? But when it comes to us, or when it comes to the soul definition of what fear can mean, you know, we use fear, like we were saying before, we use fear in our everyday lives. You know, fear has this connotation that we use today called anxiety, or like things of, you know, fear of guilt, things that are going to happen of future events. And what Shlomo HaMelech is telling you is that we use this human emotion a lot. We use it a lot in very positive ways. We use it in a lot of negative ways, especially in today's, you know, generation. But what he's telling you is that even though you might have fear in, like, you're scared of a wild beast, or you're scared of your future career, you know, you're scared of how you're going to provide for your family, you should use that emotion that God gave you and use it to serve him. Use it to have full faith, because the first step is recognizing and then building the love. Hashem is not telling you, hey, I want you to fear me because I'm low-key a fascist and I want to control your mind and have a rent-free zone in your head. No, he's telling you is that this is going to be the first step for you to really realize that you were put on this earth for a specific objective, and you're going to figure that out. But first, you have to recognize who made this starting line, who drew it with a crayon and said, okay, now you're able to go. So now that we have that in mind, I like to bring up this whole idea of that, you know, fear can be a mental check. Like, how do we are able to put this in this sort of application in today's world? And I would say is that, you know, fearing God is a mental check on yourself. You know, when you're operating, when you're going to work, when you wake up in the morning. You know that obviously you're not a perfect person and you need to do the things that are necessary for you in life. And you're going to have a lot of evil inclinations sometimes. But know that you have this fear in God, knowing that there is an omnipresent being that created you. Have that mental check. Have that certain thing that makes you realize, hey, I need to step back. I need to think about, you know, things that I'm about to do. You know, have that thought of, I'm not just some wild beast that can just do what its, you know, instinct is to do. Have that sort of check that whenever you're doing something, it's for the good. And I'm sorry if I'm not able to like fully express these ideas down what I'm saying, but at the end of the day, this sort of thing is gonna lead you to what this pasuk is telling you. Yiras Hashem Rishis Das is that fearing God is gonna lead you to the beginning of a pure knowledge in its purest form, like the chemical elements. You're gonna see the divisions of atoms, of how you're able to like really focus into like the whole formula of, you know, what is gonna be your personalized goals, what are gonna be your steps on how you're gonna leave a name when you're gone. And I think I'm gonna leave that there because we're already on the 11 minutes and we're gonna try to transition easily into the Gemara. So I'm gonna try to make this a little shorter than what we did a week and a half ago. Sorry that I was absent. I was on a camping trip, been kind of a bum to be honest. But you know, I'm back in the shtetl and I'm ready to metal. Okay, so here we go. We were talking about last week how Peres Mefuzarim is essentially a connection to Nisyashu, which is resignation, meaning that whenever you have a resignated feeling with an item, that item no longer has an owner attached to it. So looking at that fact, what is necessarily Yush? Well, the Gemara says is that when you have fruit that are scattered within a certain area, then that has to be a sign that there, therefore, since it's such an since it looks like there is no, you know, conscious sign or even a real sign of those fruit, then it looks like that owner put resignation and said, oh, I don't want those anymore. So therefore he would be allowed to take it. Now we're going to see more details into this whole concept, but know that when Yush activates, there is no longer an owner. And then we look at this definition called Hefker, right? Which is a free for all. And now we're going to go more into all of the items that the Mishnah expresses that you're allowed to grab. I don't know why I was thinking about the opposite. But Meos Mefuzaros, right? We look at scattered money. So what is scattered money? I would say, hey, look, scattered fruit, scattered money must be the same thing. Well, I wouldn't say so. I'm going to look at my scholarly friend, Rashi. We're literally little people on these giant shoulders. I stole that quote and I'm confident about it, but it's a true fact. The commentaries of Rashi are something that I could never commentate on. I'm just a deliverer. Like, I'm just someone that wants to pass on what these, like, what an Albert Einstein would say on a physical, like, math equation. Now, what does, you know, Albert Einstein, hence Rashi, say? Meos Mefuzaros, and those names should not be compared because Rashi was way cooler, way smarter, and all these types of stuff. Hoyil ve'ein lahem siman nikar is that since there is no siman nikar, which is a specific sign, there is no initials on the certain item. There's no specific sign on the item. Yushe miyash, it becomes resignated. Vehu lahu hefker vezeu tam kulam. Now that item has specifically become hefker. Zatam kulam, this is the entire reason. Now, this Rashi proves what we were saying before, is that we have catalysts, right? What are these catalysts? The simon. If there is a simon on an item, if you see a driver's license in a wallet, there is a designated owner to it. There is still some attachment. There's still some link to the previous owner. However, what Rashi is saying is that if there is no siman nikar, if there is no specific sign on the item, then you would not be allowed to take it. No, I'm sorry, that you would be allowed to take it because the chain is already cut off. The owner already said, in a theoretical sense, if I cared about that item, I would have put a specific sign. And especially in this case, when we have this idea of scattering, you know, and honestly, very early on, we're not really going to understand why the Mishnah gave, why is it a plural sense? Why is it scattered fruit? Why can it just be an apple laying on the floor that has no sign? Why wouldn't I be allowed to take it from that? And you know, I did ask this to my Rebbe that I learned this Gemara with, and what he told me is that the Mishnah is stating specific scenarios. And this whole, you know, podcast episode, whatever you call it, we're really just going slowly into the mindset of how the Mishnah and how the Gemara really went into these cases, you know? So obviously it's not gonna state a whole huge agenda, but we come to see that in these specific scenarios, you would be allowed to take these items. So there are not a lot of items to take, but if you do see scattered money on the ground, theoretically, you would be allowed to take it. If there wasn't no sign, of course. So we go along and we see krikos birshus harabim. So sheaves in the Rishus HaRabim. So what are sheaves? So obviously I'm gonna go back to my main homie, Rashi, and he's gonna tell me what are they. So this is a more technical Rashi. This Rashi is just gonna straight up tell you what the Mishnah really means by krikos. Because krikos, it says sheaves, but what are sheaves? So he says, Omer Katanim, they are small sheaves. Okay, this is the same thing that the Mishnah told me, but in a smaller form. Kemo Matzaim Ulamim, that they are binding sheaves. So they are specifically saying that these sheaves are like very binded together. Right, the Targube Birushami Mikran Kerichan. And in another form of the Talmud, in Talmud Yerushalmi, not Talmud Bavli, and what we are learning in now. And by the way, if you are if you're still listening to this, I applaud you and I love you, but we are on Bava Metzia, Perek Sheni, like straight up in the beginning, just to let you guys know. But we are learning from Talmud Bavli, but they were saying that in Talmud Yerushalmi, which is the unwritten Torah that was written in Israel, they used the language of Krikhan. And Krikos is essentially using the whole description of what small binded sheaves are. So instead of saying Omrim Ketanim Na'alulei Ulamim, it just says Krikos. So it's more of just trying to be as concise as possible. So now we go along with Birshus HaRabim. So I asked this to my Rebbe again, and I learned this Gemara with him every day, Baruch Hashem, Liyan Hara. And he was talking about how I was wondering how, if this might have had, if this word is connected to krikos. So is that if you have small binding sheaves in a private area, would you be allowed to take it? And when you think about it, I would say yes, if it's connected to Birshus HaRabim. So, I mean, I can go back to Rashi, how it explains Shakol Dishim Aleo Ve'im Hayasiman Likshar Alehem Arehu Nishai. And what is that basically saying is that the scholars are going back to this idea of that the simon hat is tied onto itself. And if it was inside a Rishus HaRabim, you wouldn't know whose it would be. However, if it was in a private domain, you'd probably have a better idea of who these small binded sheaves would be for. So it seems like Rashi holds that these two words are connected together. So I'm just gonna check how far we're into this, but I'm gonna try to finish the list off real quick. Begui de Bela, and we have figs that are condensed in a cake. Kriko shel nachton, loaves of a baker. Now, loaves of a baker is pretty interesting. I gave this like whole thing to my rabbi. I keep repeating this, but about, oh, what if, like, if you get bread from Avram's Bakery, which happens to be my name, you know, you would know that would be Avram's Bakery bread because it would have like the packaging with the nice, you know, string that ties the whole bag. Like, you would know who to return it to. But in these times, they didn't know what plastic was, so they would just have loaves of bread. And thinking about that, if you remove the packaging and you just had professionally made bread in front of you, you would not know the difference between a professionally made baker over here and a professionally made baker over there. Now, what is this Mishnah telling you? The Mishnah is telling you to think about if loaves of bread, I'm allowed to take that, I find on the ground, because there is no specific sign, going back to this concept of there is no specific sign. So therefore, I would be allowed to take it because it catalysts into this concept called yush. Then that would mean a personal loaf of bread that a mother would make for Shabbat, or, you know, someone that is, you know, just loves making bread. He would have a certain siman yikar, a specific sign you would have on it. And if you are a, you know, supportive community member, you would know this person. It's like, oh, Leia does make her loaves of bread a little slanted with a little, you know, one of those bubbles that you see on bread sometimes. So it must be hers. But over here, no, this is a professional baker that made this loaf. So therefore, you wouldn't know whose it is and you would return it. Okay, now we're just going to go fast. Mechazor shel dagim, strings of fish, v'chitichachos shel basar, and cutlets of meat, v'gizo semer shel argumam, and purple wool, and like shears of purple wool of sheep, which is a pretty fancy item. Now, I think I'm going to stop right here, and yeah. We see that all of these items that we're going to get into, and I'm going to try to finish the Mishnah tomorrow because we're already halfway done. But I just wanted to say that, you know, thank you for listening, and also, you know, take in mind that this is not, you know, if you're a religious person and you're looking at this podcast like, oh wow, why is he, you know, going slow, or why is he not just going over the whole No, this is not dafyomi. This is just like a 30-minute session where you could chill and listen to, you know, the words of the Gemara and give a little bit, and me giving commentary on, you know, how can we look at these words more closely? How can we give more insight and really try to understand, you know, the scholars that were way bigger than us? You know, people think that we live in this sort of evolution where the next generation becomes smarter. In Judaism, we believe the opposite, you know, because the people that understood the world the most were the people that received, you know, the Old Testament or the Torah. You know, it's not this sort of, you know, it was the monkeys and now Elon Musk. I would say that it's Elon Musk to Moses. You know, comparing Elon Musk to Moses, I would say Moses was able to split the sea with God's power with the staff, so he clearly wins. I'm going to end off with that note, and I hope you guys have a great day. Peace.